In their new book, The Knowledge Illusion, Why We Never Think Alone, cognitive scientists Stephen Sloman and Philip Fernbach explain how the human mind is both brilliant and, well, pathetic. How humanity's achievements can be so dazzling and include complex societies and technologies, and yet most individuals understand so little. Sloman and Fernbach argue that we survive and thrive despite our mental shortcomings because we live in a rich community of knowledge. We're constantly drawing on information and expertise, they say, stored outside our heads, in our bodies, our environment, our possessions, and the people with whom we interact, and usually we don't even realize we're doing it. The name of the book is The Knowledge Illusion, Why We Never Think Alone. Stephen Sloman is a professor of cognitive, linguistic, and psychological sciences at Brown University. Philip Fernbach is a cognitive scientist and professor of marketing at the University of Colorado Leeds School of Business. And it's a pleasure to welcome both gentlemen to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Great pleasure to be here. Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us. Let me just say, I am from the Albany area. I grew up listening to WAMC, so this is quite exciting.
Excellent. So part of your knowledge comes from us. Are we one of the outside influences?
Yeah, you could say that.
Okay.
Sure.
What brought you down this path of looking at knowledge as an illusion?
I'm a cognitive scientist. We're both cognitive scientists, and I've been studying how people reason for few decades. The last 15 years I've been focused on how people reason about causal systems, about the mechanisms by which the world works, because I think that that's really what the mind is about, understanding how the world works. And over the years, in part influenced by a great psychologist at Yale named Frank Kyle, I've come to the realization that people just don't understand things all that well. And in particular, they don't understand things as well as they think they do. And so we felt the need to explain that. And the book is the product of our attempt to explain that.
So, Philip, why do you think that is the case, that we think we know more than we actually do?
So the argument that we make in the book is that really what the mind evolved to do is not to store a lot of detailed information in one individual. The world is just too complex to know enough. And what we are really great at as human beings is collaborating with others, drawing information from wherever it exists, not necessarily in our own heads, to be able to achieve complex goals. And what happens when we do that is that we sometimes can mistake the knowledge that's sort of spread across our community with the knowledge that exists in our own head. So by virtue of other people knowing things or other information, the information being available elsewhere, we sort of feel like we ourselves know it. And so that's sort of the root of the illusion that we explore in the book.
So, Stephen, you make the point in the book that not even are you not as smart as you think you are, that you are, in fact, perhaps quite ignorant. So how do you make that? I mean, obviously, nobody wants to think of themselves in that way. But how do you arrive at that? Is that through comparison?
The intent of the book is not to judge people. It is surprising how little people know. And there's another great psychologist who's now in Michigan named David Dunning, who has demonstrated this pretty clearly. You know, often people don't know basic things, like 25% of the American population doesn't know that the Earth revolves around the sun rather than vice versa. And late-night talk show hosts make fun of, you know, the fact that so many people can't name the vice president of the United States, for instance. So, you know, and look, I introspect, and I know how little I know. So there is a sense in which people are ignorant, for sure. But the real point is that we're more ignorant than we think we are, right? And that's the puzzle for a cognitive scientist. So why do we live in an illusion of understanding? And you can demonstrate that we live in an illusion because if you ask people to explain how something works, then often they're unable to. They're unable to explain simple things like zippers and toilets and ballpoint pens. And they'll come to the realization themselves that they overestimated the extent of their knowledge before attempting to explain.
So even if I can explain a zipper, Philip, that still doesn't make me knowledgeable on other subjects. It just means that I know how a zipper works.
That's true. So we all have our domains of expertise. You know, Steve and I both study cognitive science. We know more than the average Joe about cognitive science, but I will say that I'm always discovering how little I know. But the point is that there's just so many things to know, and everything is complicated, and so it's just not practical for one individual to be a master of all domains. We really have to rely on information stored elsewhere in our community and expertise. It's just not possible to become an expert on everything that we need to be able to use to function in our lives.
So, Stephen, that's really one of the big points of the book is how we access and we tap that expertise stored outside of our heads. So how do we do that and ultimately do it relatively flawlessly?
Well, I'm glad you're so optimistic about the human condition. I think with regard to toilets and ballpoint pens and zippers, we are relatively flawless, you're right, because it's clear where the expertise is, right? Like I know which plumber to call, you know, the one who's not going to rip me off. But there are other domains, you know, the domains of English literature and religion and most scarily politics, in which there's not all that much agreement about who the experts are. There's in fact fundamental disagreement between different communities, and this can lead to serious problems.
But Philip, where does our capacity for making choices as to which information we believe, which information we don't, what is, to use the phrase that's all the rage now, of what is fake news, what isn't fake news, that we have a knowledge base that allows us to make informed decision or at least informed decisions for us?
Well, that's one of the points that we make in the book, is that often we really, as individuals, don't really know enough by ourselves to be able to justify a lot of the attitudes and beliefs that we have. And so we really have to draw on our community. And what do communities do? Well, communities tend to have particular worldviews and sets of beliefs and attitudes that all kind of hang together. And so we tend to channel our communities when we express an attitude more so than channel some kind of rational thought process by which we've arrived at a particular attitude. So often people believe things really, really strongly, but then when they think about it, they realize that actually they don't know that much about it. And their strength of their attitude really just reflects what their community is saying.
Stephen, you believe there is no such thing as independent thinking.
I think even when we cross the street, there's a sense in which our thinking depends on the thinking of others, right? So when we're crossing the street, we're making assumptions about what the guy who's driving down the street towards us is thinking. For instance, that he's not going to step on the accelerator and speed up and try to hit us. So every belief we have depends on knowledge that actually resides in other people's heads. Yeah. You can see this clearly when you think about language. So I might say something like, I hope to see a piece of molybdenum one day. And the fact is, I have no idea what molybdenum is, right? Maybe you do. Maybe one of your listeners does. I believe there's an expert out there in the world who could identify a piece of molybdenum. So when I use the word, and I think I used it successfully. I mean, the sentence makes sense. But the meaning of the sentence is actually determined in part by some expert who I can't even identify right now, who could hypothetically identify that piece of molybdenum. And I think many of our beliefs have that quality.
So when you look at whether we know that word or not, but if we think we know that word, then it passes on, so the other person who is listening to us will then think they know the word, and it would seem to me that would then become a rather vicious cycle.
Exactly, and that's the great problem in politics, that I believe I understand because the people around me believe they understand, and they believe they understand because I and the other people around them believe they understand, and in the end, it's all just a great big empty bubble.
So when you think of your success, of what you have done, is that success based on our experience? Is it based on our intelligence? Or is it based just on the situation that we are put in our adaptability? Philip?
Yeah, so I think we argue in the book for taking a different view of achievement and intelligence than people normally think about. So we argue in the book that we overestimate or we overweight individual mental horsepower when we think about achievement. So we tend to think about things like how many facts can you remember, how fast can you process information, and so on. And what we argue in the book is really that everything we do is a collaborative pursuit, and therefore we should be thinking about achievement and intelligence really with respect to the group. So how much do you contribute to a group's success in achieving complex goals?
Well, the name of the book is The Knowledge Illusion, Why We Never Think Alone. It is published by Riverhead Books and authored by Stephen Sloman and Philip Fernbach. Stephen and Philip, thank you very much for sharing with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program this morning.
Thanks so much. It was great talking to you.
Thank you very much. Again, the title of the book, The Knowledge Illusion, published by Riverhead. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.